Washington Journal continues.
Adrian Moore is joining us from Los Angeles area this morning, Vice President of Reason Foundation, here to talk about U.S. and Europe economic instability. Mr. Moore, I want to show our viewers an opinion piece written this morning in the Financial Times by Clive Crook. He writes this: the least substantial line of alarm is Greece as a fiscal harbinger. The U.S. might not be Greece, say pessimists, but California could be. Here's a state so strapped for cash that it's recently resorted to paying its workers with IOUs rather than money. If that is not default, it is the next best thing. Could California do for the U.S. what Greece is doing for the EU? What do you think, Mr. Moore?
Well, I think you can go too far drawing parallels here, but there are a lot of lessons to be learned from what's happening in Europe and with Greece to the United States as a whole and to California in particular. Over the weekend, the big news was that the EU came together and agreed on a gigantic package, not just to bail out Greece, but to sort of backstop all of the troubled states in our nations in the EU and sort of bring some stability and certainty back to the market. In fact, they were very explicit about targeting the market, the stock markets with this package. But they're imposing a lot of conditions on Greece and presumably on other recipients of this aid as part of that, that brings in a different dynamic than what you've seen so far in the United States. Because we have to realize, in 2009, states across the nation faced huge budget deficits, and that passing their 2009 budgets caused lots of angst. But we had a huge stimulus package come out in which the federal government essentially gave billions of dollars to states to sustain at least their levels of spending and in many cases expand it. Well, unless we have another stimulus package, that money's run out, and the states to a large extent use that money to expand ongoing operations, so to speak. Medicaid recipients, the education system and so forth, and now they're scrambling to find that money this year. California is, of course, the worst of the lot, facing at least a $20 billion deficit right now, which means they're going to have to make massive cuts or massive tax increases to make this work.
But Adrian Moore, how does the California legislature work when it comes to massive cuts or massive tax increases?
Well, they don't. that's the real conundrum in California, as much as like in Greece. You look at Greece, 40% of the economy was the government. A huge percentage of the population was employed by the government, and so there was just a huge disincentive to take the steps necessary to live within their means. And now that's exploded and brought the whole European Union in to try to stabilize it. It's going to take years for them to unwind that in any kind of rational way. Even if they started cutting right away, that would depress their economy. So they're in a bailout situation for some time to come. California's legislature is in a similar position. The spending is at unsustainable levels and has been for a couple of years. Revenue is not increasing yet, and so they're not willing to raise taxes beyond the state's largest tax increase ever that we passed last year, which still hasn't managed to increase revenue. And making $20 billion in cuts is very unpalatable to the legislature. Now, Governor Schwarzenegger is about to issue his May budget, which is an update on his January budget, this week. And that's going to propose roughly $20 billion in cuts, or maybe $15 billion in cuts and $5 billion in shell games, like usual. But where that's going to go with the legislature, they're going to have to face the music eventually. So far, they are not willing to. They are not willing to embrace cuts. They're not willing to embrace revenue increases. They're just waiting and hoping that someone will take the lead and make something happen. But it's their job.
This is a piece this morning in the Baltimore Sun about teachers facing layoffs across the country. And the chart here shows that in California, there's more than 5,000, they're expected to lay off more than 5,000 teachers in that state.
Yeah, it's always a little bit tricky because we have a law in California passed some years ago that requires school districts to hand out pink slips, or school districts to hand out pink slips, a year, full year in advance. So any layoffs that would happen this year would have to be based on pink slips handed out last year. And right now, administrators are looking at, we don't know what's going to happen next year. So there's a lot of what you might call prophylactic pink slips that are put out to give them some wiggle room when actual budget time comes. Over the past few years, a pretty high percentage of those pink slips have actually been acted on, so it may be a few thousand teachers do get laid off. How much of an effect that'll have is hard to say, because we've had a lot of efforts to reduce class sizes in California, and we also have a declining school enrollment in the last few years in California, so it might not be as disastrous as it sounds, but those kind of cuts are necessary, and that's at the local level. I mean, that's the other thing that plays in this California picture, is that the state heavily funds counties and cities in California and school districts, and now that the state's in a bind, they're holding on to some of the money they would normally pass down to lower levels of governments, and so those lower levels of government are in maybe even more dire financial straits. In fact, we're probably looking at some more cities in California declaring bankruptcy in the next year.
Outside of California, where the situation in Europe could impact the United States, a lot of newspapers this morning report that because people are fleeing from the euro, they'll go to the dollar. That will make our exports to other countries much more expensive. And so what will be the impact of that on a state like California and other states in our country?
Well, that's always, you know, it's always a two-edged sword. I mean, it does slow down the process of export-related job growth, which can be a crucial part of a recovery from a recession. On the other hand, consumer spending is a crucial part of recovery from the recession as well, and cheaper imports can help stimulate consumer spending. So you've got a couple of countervailing effects there. It's not clear, I think, at this point, that the effect of what's happening with the euro will have a large effect on our economic recovery. I think it's definitely a ripple in the pond, but I'm not sure how big of a ripple it is.
What are some other states that our viewers should be watching, similar to California's economic situation?
Yeah, there's some interesting contrasts when you look at the states. I mean, you know, some states have managed not to get in hot water or serious red ink. Probably the biggest state economy that hasn't gotten in trouble is Texas, and so it's interesting to look at the contrast to California. But on the trouble side, you've actually got the majority of states are in pretty deep trouble. In a percentage term, you know, states like Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York. New York is clearly the second worst to California, but a lot of the Rust Belt states have pretty substantial deficits. They're just not as large in absolute terms in California as California, though in percentage terms they're pretty severe. You're looking at many states that have $5, $6, $7 billion deficits out of budgets that are smaller than California's. And so you're going to see widespread problems. And the latest numbers coming out in March and April show that revenue is down in most states. And they were really counting on coming into their budget year in 2010 with some revenue increases to allow them to increase or at least sustain some levels of spending. And that doesn't seem to be coming to pass. So you're going to see cuts in many states across the nation.
Tweet here from one of our viewers says this: California screwed up a while ago with the ballot resolution of all critical measures. Too much emotion, little reason was result.
I actually completely disagree with that. I wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal right before Christmas where we looked at some of the research done by a professor at USC who's really tracked all of the ballot initiatives that have been passed in California that place spending or budgetary restrictions on California, and it's really pretty minor. A few billion dollars of our $60 to $100 billion budget, depending on what year you look at, are spoken for by ballot initiatives. That's not really the challenge. The challenge California has is year on year for the last decade, we have increased spending in California at more than double the rate of revenue growth. Needless to say, You eventually hit the brick wall when you do that. You just can't do that. Revenue growth in almost every year in California was substantial. Up until 2009, we had handsome revenue growth, much exceeding inflation and population growth, and yet we couldn't even live within that much, those fine financial circumstances. We had to spend even more, and that's caught up with us. One way to look at it is revenue projected right now to come in for this fiscal year that we're in now is about the same as what we had in 2006. So essentially what we're looking at is the crisis of having to go back to 2006 spending levels. Now, I lived here in 2006, and the state was not a catastrophe. People were not dying in the streets. We weren't kicking kids out of schools. Things actually functioned just fine here in 2006, and I don't think it would be a disaster if we had to go back to 2006 spending levels. It's just getting the legislature to bite the bullet and figure out, well, what of the spending that we've increased since 2006 can we bring ourselves to rein in?
Shelby Township, Michigan, Lenny on the Republican line. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. There's several things that obviously that comes to mind over your guest's subject here, but one of the points that I wanted to bring up this morning is the fact that when I look around the world and see and you know, and paying attention to what Greece is going through currently, well, it looks to me that the healthcare issue is really resonating there. As to when you look at what Germany is asking Greece to do, first thing that they're well, not the first, but one of the big things they're asking is to privatize healthcare. So how do you feel about what healthcare is going to do when it starts really coming into play?
Well, I think the one thing we know for sure is that this is a large new benefit that is going to have to be paid for. And the numbers have been moving. They moved throughout the healthcare debate, and they immediately started moving after the law was passed. So I think we're some time from knowing the true cost of our current healthcare policy. But there's a lot of useful parallels there. If you look at Greece's situation, they spent a couple of decades, really, but particularly the last decade, seriously ramping up not only government employment, but the benefit packages provided both to employees and citizens by the government across the board. The benefit suite is pretty widespread there. And they created a similar situation to what I was describing in California. Spending that was programmed essentially to increase each year much faster than revenue. So it was been inevitable for some time that they were going to run into this crisis, just like we can look at Portugal, Italy, and Ireland and Spain to some extent and say, there's, certainly deep concern that they might be on a similar track. California's in that boat. Some states, other states in the U.S. are in that boat. You just can't provide all of these benefits without having revenue to pay for it. If you don't, and as well as doing all the traditional services, something has to flex there. The U.S. is not facing that music yet. I mean, if you look at the statements from Tim Geithner in the last few months, he's pretty much saying, yes, we recognize we have all these problems, but we don't want to solve them now because we're trying to get out of a recession. Putting off dealing with this only makes the problem worse, as we can see in Greece.
Another tweet for you, Adrian Moore, a follow-up to the previous one. Don't revenue increases in California require two-thirds majority in the California legislature? And let me add to that a piece by the Wall Street Journal this morning with the headline, States Cut Tax Incentives for New Businesses as a Way to Collect More Revenue.
Well, to the first part, tax increases require a two-thirds majority in the legislature to pass in California. Not all revenue increases necessarily amount to tax increases. There's, a fair amount of discretion within the legislature's ability to affect revenues in less direct ways. But generally speaking, yes, they do need that two-thirds vote to both to pass a budget and to pass a tax increase. So that makes it a bit of a challenge, and that's been partly what's both prevented, I think, tax increases from being the sole solution to our problem right now, but also, made it pretty tricky to pass a budget. it's, you know, that's a high hurdle to jump over, but I think it's very popular in California because it has prevented our very gerrymandered state legislature from just using tax increases year on year to keep revenue up with its very high level of spending growth.
Daly City, California. Ken, on the Democratic line, you're on the air with Adrian Moore.
Yeah, hi, how are you? You know, one of the things that California has problems with is its interaction with the federal government. It's my understanding that for every dollar that Californians send to the federal government, we only get about 78 cents back, as opposed to states like Alabama and some other southern states that get over a dollar 10 back for every dollar that they send. So that's one thing. The other thing are there are, in the school system, there are a bunch of unfunded federal mandates that strap the schools for cash. There's a huge illegal alien problem, housing illegal aliens in prison, that Californians bear the cost of. And on top of that, the taxes here are relatively low. My late mother lived in south of Pennsylvania in Delaware County and paid $6,000 a year taxes, $4,000 for schools alone, on a house that was worth between $200,000 and $300,000. And so, you know, there are a number of things here that are out of balance. And but I believe it's the interaction with the federal government that really, really costs California.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways of slicing the interaction with the federal government. And generally speaking, it's true that California pumps more into the federal system than it gets out. And that's because we have the federal system has, for a long time, cross-subsidized. It takes money from the richer states and it gives money to the poorer states because the programs that the federal government funds tend to flow that way. That's true, but I would not attribute that to having any serious role with California's current fiscal crisis. I mean, that is entirely a homegrown problem. Nothing in the fact that the federal government taxes Californians and gives them less back really affects California's ability, state government's ability to live within its means. Like I said, the spending levels that we would need to live within the revenue that we're making in California right now, or that the state government is making, is not that dramatic a cutback. But a lot of the other things that you mentioned are you know, interesting parts of the problem. California is not a low tax state. You can find five different reports out there published in the last year or two comparing total taxation levels of the states, and California is always 48th, 49th, or 50th in terms of, you know, being the bottom of the heap or the top if you're the most heavily taxed state. Property taxes are kind of low in California because of Prop 13 that limits property tax increases, but we've made up for that with lots of other taxes.
We're talking with Adrian Moore, Vice President of the Reason Foundation, about economic instability in Europe and what it means for the United States. A reminder to our viewers that many of you have heard that President Obama is slated to announce that his next Supreme Court nominee will be Elena Kagan, and we will carry that live at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Around 10 a.m. Eastern Time is when we're expecting the president to make that announcement, so keep the channel here on C-SPAN. We'll carry that live for you. Jonesboro, Arkansas, Robert on the Independent line. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and good morning, Adrian. I'm, by the way, originally from Los Angeles myself, but my question concerns the impact of a serious default by California on the nation as a whole. What do you think would happen if California were to seriously default?
Yeah, well, I think it would be very bad for very bad for the markets and for the financial system. I mean, we all know we've been through a financial crisis. We seem to be climbing slowly out of that financial crisis as well as out of the recession. Having California default would actually arguably have a much bigger effect on our financial system than the default of Greece, which is a very small part of Europe's economy, has had on the European markets. So it would be disastrous. I don't think it's that likely that we would have outright defaults by California, because ultimately the legislature has there, you know, has the ability to avoid default. Will they actually have the guts to do it is the question when it comes down to that point. Are they going to see default as a less painful option for them than making cuts or whatever options they might have, raising taxes if they can get a two-thirds vote? I don't know. That's hard to predict. Watching the track record of the legislature over the last decade and a half, ultimately when they're out of tricks, when they can't shuffle money from one year to the other anymore, they just can't do anything else, they have usually found a way to cut spending and get by. And occasionally have increased taxes. We're just coming off of a big batch of increases in taxes. So I think the most likely thing to happen is for them to ultimately face the music and make some serious cuts this year. Whether it'll be a full $20 billion, I don't know, but probably enough to avoid defaults.
Adrian Moore, what is the current bond rating for the state of California?
Oh, it's at the nadir, I think. California's rating is the lowest of any state in the nation right now, and can't go much lower. The state is not borrowing a lot of money right now because of the cost of that low credit rating. A few bond issues have gone out in the last few months. The voters have approved a lot of bonds in the last several years that haven't been issued yet. So we're sitting on the potential of more borrowing, but California's debt levels are already very high. I mean, part of why we're in this situation, we have too high debt, too much of the budget's being consumed by making payments on the current debt. Ultimately, though, the credit rating, the rating agencies know that the legislature just passed a number of tax increases last year, so they can pass more tax increases this year if they really, really want to, and there's not some kind of voter revolt, at least in the eyes of the rating agencies. So there's sort of in a sense, I think, a floor on how low California's rating can go, because they have shown that they can raise taxes, and as appalling as that is for those of us who have to pay taxes in California, that's how the rating agencies look at it. I think there's enough outrage over that now, over last year's tax increases in California, and they've looked at how it's actually caused revenue to go down. They might hesitate to do that, and they really look at spending cuts instead.
Andrew Moore, any inkling from those that hold bonds, California bonds, that they will demand a higher interest rate?
Yeah, I think so. I think the last two batches of bonds that California sold in the last several months, in both instances, they had to pay a higher interest rate than they had anticipated and that they had projected publicly before they went out with those bond issues. So I think in light of Greece, that you were actually going to see more of that, because what's happened across the globe in response to Greece is a lot of institutions and organizations are looking at bond debt and saying, wow, have we misjudged some of this? Are our plans, to purchase bonds, maybe we should rethink that a little bit. And that sort of hedging mentality has spread across the globe, and that's going to affect all states, of California in particular. I think they're going to have to pay a higher interest rate, in coming months if they want to issue any bonds, though there's no sign of incipient bond issues right now.
All right, let's go to Brooklyn. Robert is joining us on the Republican line. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm very concerned about what the Republican is doing, because it seems like it's only too weird for the Republican. It's blaming the union and the illegal alien. And it's the Republican that passed the bill to deregulate the whole market. So I don't understand. For instance, Greece will never get out of the mess, because it's not only Greece. You got Spain and plus about four or five more other countries in the European Union. So they're going to need more than $100 billion to get out of the mess.
And well, the news reports this morning, caller, say that the IMF and the EU are looking close to $1 trillion for all 16 nations that are part of the European Union. We'll go on to Salt Lake City, Utah. Cindy, on the Democratic line, you're next. Good morning.
Hi. Goldman Sachs sold derivatives to all the states between 2007 and 2009. Now with the tax base gone, Mr. Paulson can come along and bid against those derivatives, just like with his negative PR campaign he's doing with Greece, Italy, Spain, Ireland, and so forth. Can he bring the states down just like he did with Greece?
Well, I don't know that he brought Greece down, but I mean, there is an issue there. When we're looking at derivatives and all of the questionable products that have been on the market for some time, we tend to focus on the sellers and what they did and forget that the buyers must have wanted what they were buying. And, you know, in cases where it's not outright fraud, you have to wonder, you know, what were these people thinking? In the case of the states, one of the reasons why California in particular, but a fair number of other states, New York, Illinois, Michigan in particular, are feeling some of the squeeze lately is they've rapidly expanded in the last decade their pension and health care benefits for state workers and have counted on paying for that by returns on investments in the market. And they've not done well on their investments in the market and have lost a lot of money on that. And now they have to make that up with flows out of current revenue. They have to make it up with cash flows, and they don't have the cash to do that. And that's taking money out of the budget that they didn't plan on when they were programming all of the other spending that they're doing. So there is some real challenges there, not just for states in Europe who also had these problems, but states in the United States where not being good investors with the money that they have to invest and not getting the returns that they expected is coming back now to bite them in current, you know, sort of putting their current budgets together and figuring out how to make up the gap in their investment returns.
Omaha, Nebraska. John, on the independent line, you're next.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, C-SPAN, have I told you lately that I love you? You know, the size of the economy, is there a comparison that can be made between Greece and California? I know they're two different parts of the world, but California is said to be like as large economy as a lot of countries in the world. And then secondly, where California has had a large problem is paying for the influx of the services that illegal immigrants use. Where did Greece's problems come for?
Adrian Moore?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversy over exactly how much of a drain on California's economy illegal immigration is. I mean, that's certainly a component of what's going on, but it's complex, and it's not at all certain. If you look at the components of the California budget, where the spending goes, there's not a lot there that you can attribute directly to illegal immigration. And so to say, well, we got a $20 billion gap, I mean, you might be able to come up with a way to say a billion or two of that has something to do with illegal immigration, but it's clearly not the balance of the problem. The balance of the problem is the higher education system, which is not an illegal immigration problem. The prison system, which isn't a huge illegal immigration problem because most illegal immigrants that go into the correctional system wind up going into federal prisons, not state prisons. And the welfare system, which now there's clearly some overlap there. A lot of you have probably heard, you know, the sort of infamous statistics that with, you know, about 12% of the population in California has about a third of welfare recipients in the nation. So we have a very generous welfare system, and we're not really good at filtering out folks who shouldn't be eligible for those benefits. And so that does cost us. But the closest parallel between California and Greece, I think, is the sort of the state employment. Greece, in a lot of ways, you can put the main crux of Greece's problem down to nationalizing the workforce. I mean, so much of the workforce, more than 40% of the workforce, I've seen estimates up to 50% work for the government in Greece. In fact, I've seen estimates up to 60%, so it's kind of a moving figure. But it's a huge percentage. In California, it's only 20%. Only 20%. But 20% of the state's economy is the state. And a huge percentage of the workers in California are work for the state or local government. And that's the one place that's been expanding. When, in 2009, while the private employment in California was contracting, state and local government employment was expanding. And so that's, you know, that's clearly not sustainable. You can't, just like with Social Security, you can't expect to sustainably pay for an expanding number of workers on a by taxing a shrinking number of workers. That's ultimately going to not work.
We're talking with Adrian Moore. We have about 10 minutes left this morning. Want to, for our viewers, let them know about the stock market this morning. The Associated Press is reporting that stocks are surging after European leaders agreed to that nearly $1 trillion rescue plan to avoid a major debt crisis in Europe. Also, want to let you know that in about 10 minutes, President Obama will be entering the East Room. There on your screen, you can see the reporters waiting for him to come into the room. Elena Kagan is expected to be by his side. Both of them are expected to give remarks about President Obama's decision to choose her as his next nominee for the Supreme Court. We'll carry that live here on C-SPAN in about 10 minutes. Atwater, California, Paula on the Republican line. Go ahead. You're next.
Hi, Mr. Moore. I want to thank you for being so honest. But my kind of comment and question is the unfriendly business atmosphere. I live in a small county, and we've had numerous businesses try to come in, you know, 100 to 200 jobs, not huge. They're still fighting environmental lawsuits around here. And that's costly to them. They've pulled out. We live near Castle Air Force Base. There's been numerous businesses to come in there. And with the environmentalists and all these lawsuits holding them up, they just don't come in here. And I was wondering if that was one of California's problems, is this atmosphere that businesses are bad.
Yes. I mean, you know, I would say one of the biggest failings of the state government is not to recognize that that encouraging economic growth in California is crucial to sustaining the level of services that that they've become accustomed to providing. And you know, they seem to just think, look, California's California. We got Hollywood, we got beaches, we have great weather. People are going to come here no matter what. Doesn't matter what we do. They really, in Sacramento, seem to believe they just can't drive the jobs away, but that's not true. And there's a great parallel with Greece here, because if you look at the rankings, the global rankings of business friendliness that ranks the countries, Greece has been, you know, down there with, you know, Lebanon, Egypt, you know, countries that are not well known for having transparent systems and welcoming business startups and foreign businesses to come in and invest in those countries. So Greece has been very business unfriendly, and California consistently in comparisons of the states in the United States comes in at the very bottom in terms of business friendliness, both based on regulatory environment, taxes, and just the process of trying to get the permits you need to do to start a business. And you know, there's infamous examples in Los Angeles. There's been sort of a discussion going on for several months now that if you want to start a restaurant in Los Angeles, the permit process you have to go through has to go through 12 separate agencies and takes, on average, 1.5 to 3 years. And so, needless to say, you don't get nearly as many restaurant startups in Los Angeles as you might like to see to help get the economy out of a recession.
Adrian Moore, we have a tweet here from a viewer who asked, does California have more corporate contractors than public employees? How much fraud is committed by contractors versus public employees?
Good question. I have not seen a good accounting of total contract workforce versus state workforce in California, so I don't really know that question. California doesn't have a particularly friendly body of legislation and general attitude at the state government level towards contracting out. So I do research on government contracting, and California is a long ways far down the list in terms of the amount of contracting it does. So I imagine it's not a huge amount. In terms of fraud, the Bureau of State Audits does frequent reviews of fraud both by private contractors and by state employees. And the numbers are not super huge. We seem to have reasonably good systems, though, you know, a few million here and a few million there, and it's real money. But it does seem that there's more of a problem in California with fraud by state employees than there is by private contractors.
In Connecticut, Chris, on the Democratic line. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a three-part question, and I hope you answer all three parts of
Chris,
my question.
Chris, we don't have enough time for three parts, unfortunately. Can you give us your top question?
Yeah, California is one of the largest states in the country, but it also has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. What is being done about extending long-term unemployment benefits past 99 weeks?
Adrian Moore.
I haven't heard, not a lot is moving on the long-term unemployment. We've had some short-term measures taken, but if there's legislation afoot to do that, it hasn't risen to the level of public debate yet.
St. Louis, Missouri, Michael, Independent Line.
Hello.
Morning, Michael.
Hi. I lived in California for 17 years and then moved to Missouri, and I was curious, and I know that there's been a lot said about how many people are moving out of California like myself. California is real good about hiding statistics they don't like, and I was wondering if somebody or if you've looked into the number of driver's licenses that have been switched from California to another state when people move out.
I haven't looked at that. I haven't actually seen the driver's license measure. I do know there are some statistics out there on immigration and outmigration of California. And after a number of years of net loss of population, the last year and a half, California's seen some slight gains. So, and it's hard to say what's going on there. I think the more interesting question than just a driver's license look is sort of an income level look, because the anecdotal evidence by the if you interview folks who help businesses locate, they're much, much busier in California helping businesses move out than they are helping businesses move in. And if that whole industry is seeing that, you have to wonder if that's not describing what's actually going on, which is the more established folks with higher incomes, folks who already have a successful business are leaving California. We may be getting population coming in, but it seems to be younger people, lower income folks coming in.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mike, on the Republican line, you're up next.
Well, thank you, C-SPAN, for having your interactive source of information. I believe it helps our democracy, our republic. And I realize teachers do an excellent job, but I know a lot of the bill for a state and for many states and for the federal government is, the teachers. And I was wondering if it would happen if many teachers, if they could afford it, would take a voluntary cut in pay. I'm going to listen now, and God bless you both.
Yeah, that would certainly make a difference across the board in state in the state employment in California. Pay and benefits are out of whack with the private sector. You can make much better money with a set of skills in working for the state than you can in the private sector in many, many skill sets in California. So taking some pay and benefit cuts would be a big part of solving the problem. Getting that is hard. These things are all negotiated in contracts, labor union contracts, and right now the labor unions, particularly the teachers unions in California, are militantly fighting any cuts to their pay or benefits or total numbers of employees. And in fact, just 2 weeks ago, a coalition of unions and state employee unions in California, or government worker unions in California, announced their proposal for how to solve the crisis, which is $40 billion in tax increases, enough to make up the $20 billion deficit that we have right now, plus expand state spending by another $20 billion so that we can hire more state workers.
Newport Richey, Florida. Gus on the Democratic line.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, Gus.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, well, I'm calling you from Florida. The reason we have a lot of problems with the economy because of China. Nobody says anything. You know, I travel over in Europe, and the Europeans, they're complaining. Every store, they close down because they can't compete with the Chinese. Too cheap. They can't compete with them.
Adrian Moore?
I'm not buying that. When things are cheaper for us to buy, it's not bad for us. That's just the end of the story. You know, we as workers, we are increasingly having to compete against the global marketplace, not just China, but India and other places as well. And that is does put some pressure on us to be more productive, to find things we can outcompete them in, and we can't outcompete them in sort of, you know, production line work. But we can outcompete them in many, many other areas where our economy is actually growing. I don't think that's the problem. And anything that happens in the economy that makes goods cheaper for us to buy makes our lives better off. And we're all consumers, not just workers.
High Point, North Carolina. Jimmy on the Republican line. Make it quick, Jimmy, if you could.
I will, very quick. Okay. Yes or no question. From a very good source, I had information that approximately in the last 2 years, 5,000 people, very, very wealthy people have moved out of California and took $7 billion in tax revenues with them. And I just wondered if this was true or false. Thank you very much for taking my call. Love C-SPAN.
Thanks. I have heard those exact same figures, but I don't know the source, so I'm not 100% sure that's accurate. That sounds like one of those plausible but never quite pinned down numbers. We don't really know exactly the wealth of the folks who have left versus the wealth of the folks who have moved in. But I do think we know that when you look at state revenue, when you look at the tax rolls, when you look at the economy and the employment, that it's not working out well, that too many wealthier and better off and more successful folks are leaving, and too many of the folks that are coming in are sort of at the startup level, which is not in itself a bad thing, but if we're losing the most successful people at the same time, that's not going to help the state grow.
As you know, we're waiting for President Obama to enter the East Room with Elena Kagan, his pick for the Supreme Court, and he should be arriving any second here. You can see the East Room, the reporters waiting. As soon as he comes in, we will end and go there live, but let's try to get in one more phone call. Providence, Rhode Island. Jacob on the Democratic line, you're on the air. Go ahead.
When are they going to reinstall trade tariffs in this country so we can compete with China? And what about extending long-term unemployment benefits to 125 weeks?
Restricting trade has never helped our economy, and it never will. It's just that's a false idea. Whenever the idea that you somehow by forcing people to buy more expensive things from more expensive producers, because then those more expensive producers can keep paying higher wages, helps the economy, just doesn't make economic sense, and it doesn't make historical sense. Trade has helped us to grow. We need to embrace trade and continue to grow and be more flexible in that economy. Long-term unemployment benefits, given our deficits and given the fact that the economy is starting to grow and add jobs, I think we're better off leaving the current incentives in place, encouraging people to move back out into looking for jobs, which is what's happened in the past month, and not increase our deficit, which is our biggest problem on a national level and our biggest parallel to Greece right now. Let's not dig that hole any deeper.
Adrian Moore, while we're waiting for the president, if we could talk a little bit about, you said Governor Schwarzenegger will be presenting his budget here for 2010. What should our viewers be watching for in that?
Yeah, well, it looks like given, you know, last week we learned that in April revenue was more than $3 billion short of what was anticipated. It hopes that we're being held out essentially up in Sacramento, that with the economy recovering, we'd see some revenue increases, and the budget that the governor rolled out in January, which had a lot of cuts in the prison system, the higher
education
system.
Adrian Moore, unfortunately, I need to let you go. My apologies and appreciation for joining us this morning.